We need some Sergio Romo positive energy up in this thing.
No doubt.
Don't we?
Or some Hunter Pence. Yes, yes, yes. Yes. The Reverend. Something to turn around the mojo coming out of an all-star break where you go to Canada and it's three straight losses. And, oh boy, now we're starting to think about not selling at the deadline, but like, yikes, what the heck was that?
Well, what do you think is going to happen at the deadline? We are officially less than 10 days away because the trade deadline is 3 o'clock Pacific on July 31st. So we are 50 minutes less than 10 days away. So what, 9 days, 23 hours and 10 minutes from the trade deadline?
Yeah, 239 hours and 10 minutes.
Wow.
Well, you could do 24 times 10. I'm sure you could do that.
Yeah, 240.
Attaboy. And then you take away 50 minutes and here we are.
Okay.
So what's going to happen? Not a damn thing.
You don't think they're going to do anything?
They might.
At least not anything big.
They might add a left-handed reliever. I think that's all that they can really afford to do. I know they could go big and trade a couple of prospects. I just don't think that they will. And rotation-wise, you're kind of, I mean, you're not set, but it depends on what you want to do. And you and I had this conversation last week, and Verlander was going to lead him off coming out of the break. And I thought, okay, makes sense to me that you get three looks at Verlander, and then you can decide how you feel about Verlander going forward. And, well, one start in, and you're not feeling great about Verlander after one start coming out of the break. He got knocked around pretty good.
He did.
Early and often.
Yeah.
A lot of loud contact in that second inning.
And now he'll be pitching in Atlanta to close out the series coming up in a couple of days. Those are his first two starts. Let me just name some guys that in... These are varying degrees of likelihood they will be traded. But in terms of the market of players that are potentially available, Dibs, over the next 10 days at the trade deadline, Eugenio Suarez, who's having, honestly, like an MVP-caliber season, if Shohei Ohtani didn't exist, and if Suarez was in the AL, if Aaron Judge didn't exist, if Cal Raleigh didn't exist, he would be getting some MVP love. He has 35 home runs. Third baseman for the Diamondbacks. He's likely going to be traded. He's a name that's available. Probably the best player overall. Probably the best bat as well. Stephen Kwan, Bay Area kid. Outfielder for the Guardians. Potentially, he could be traded. The Guardians are having a rough season. Jaron Duran, Red Sox. He might be on the move. Sandy Alcantara, starting pitcher for the Marlins. Former Cy Young Award winner. He has struggled mightily this year. He might be on the move. You mentioned the Royals and their offensive woes. Maybe they trade off some pieces. Seth Lugo, veteran pitcher, maybe he's on the move. You have some relief pitchers. Emmanuel Clase, the Guardians, maybe he gets moved. More from the Royals, Chris Bubich, and some others. Mitch Keller is another one that we've thrown out there. Those are generally, like, I don't know, 10 of the biggest names that might be moved at the trade deadline. I will guarantee you, Dibs, the Giants don't make a move for any of those guys.
Any of those 10.
Any of those 10. I hate to be the bearer of bad news, and if you are a Giants fan that is awaiting for them to make another big splash and to really improve this team, it's not going to happen in the next 10 days. The Giants might make a small move here or there, as you said, maybe a left-handed reliever, maybe a utility man that they can throw out there in a couple of different spots, whether it's the corner outfield or maybe it's on the infield. That's all I see the Giants doing. And for me, it's pretty darn simple because they don't have a way to meet the cost, to meet the price that these teams will be asking for. I read this over the weekend, Dibs. I mentioned the name Sandy Alcantara, starting pitcher for the Marlins. This came from CBS Sports. The proposed package going to Miami for Sandy Alcantara, Bryce Eldridge, and Carson Wisenhunt. Your two top prospects, including your only prospect that is in the top 100 across all of baseball. There is no way in hell the Giants are giving away their most prized bat and their most prized arm for a guy in Sandy Alcantara who has an ERA of over 7 this year. Now, there are teams out there that will believe they can turn him around and turn him back into the Cy Young Award winner that he was in 2022. But when the price for these legit, like, franchise movers, franchise changers at the trade deadline are that high, the Giants do not have the kind of firepower in their minor leagues in order to facilitate a deal like that. The Devers trade that they made, you had to get rid of two big league arms. Although for the Red Sox, one of them is a Triple A arm, not a big league arm, but he was a big league arm for you. And then low-level prospects, guys that most of us probably hadn't even ever heard of before. The Giants don't have the kind of firepower to play in this market again.
And you don't want to. You don't want to part with Bryce Eldridge, and you don't want to part with Carson Wisenhunt for Sandy Alcantara, who I think he's got one more year, and then he's got a club option the year after that for $17 million, and that, for a guy like you said, with an ERA over 7, that's too rich. Now, somebody out there will probably trade for him and hope that they can, you know, get him turned around this year, and he'll be the pitcher that you need. And for me, the way I look at it is twofold. One, you've already made the big move, and it was Raffy Devers, and honestly, it didn't cost you that much. Now, Kyle Harrison could go on to be a great pitcher. I'm not sure how soon that will happen. If it happens, Jordan Hicks, you were basically done with. You signed him to make him a starter. You tried him as a starter. It didn't work, and that was going to be about it.
Considering the money, you were honestly probably happy that the Red Sox wanted him at all.
Right, so they took on the deal, and so you got out from underneath the money, and I think Tibbs was one of the prospects, and you know, he went to high A now, and he's a guy who's probably 2 or 3 years away if he continues to matriculate through the system. So I don't think that the cost was that high for Raffy Devers, but that was your big move. And so all those names you just rattled off, if they're going to involve either Wisenhunt and or Eldridge in order to bring them in, it's going to be a no. Because my second point of this is I do think the Giants are looking at this group as maybe a two-year project. It's not only this year. It's this year and looking at next year before you start to really make, I think, dramatic moves. And, you know, many people have told us it takes, especially for a hitter to come over from the other league, it takes time. You get to a new city, new clubhouse, new ballpark, new pitchers you're facing, new everything. So for Raffy Devers, you got to be patient. And I don't think that this Giants front office regime is going to act impatiently at all.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And the market is what the market is, and if it's going to cost your two biggest prospects to get any of these guys, I think it's an immediate no from the Giants. Now, I would feel different if their farm system was in a spot where they could, and they had been consistently producing guys over and over and over, and the way that it worked was like the way the Dodgers farm has tended to work recently, where it's, all right, we just have this endless stream of guys that we're promoting that are filling roster holes for us, that are eventually growing into being franchise centerpieces and everyday players, but also we have enough depth in our farm system that we can use those at every single trade deadline to go and acquire somebody that's proven and that can help right now. Honestly, when I think back at the Farhan era, Dibs, we just spent a lot of time talking about how the 500 baseball was infuriating, and it absolutely was. But I think the biggest sin of the Farhan era was not that the farm system didn't get better by a wide enough margin. The farm system actually got worse while Farhan was here. Somehow, he took over and it was barren. There was nobody there. Somehow, when he leaves, it is worse. And I don't understand that. It makes absolutely no sense when you are unwilling to trade away almost any prospects to bring anybody of any present-day value in here, yet somehow, after your 6 years here, you leave the farm system in a worse spot. This is not Buster's fault that he's not willing to trade his top two prospects, because he knows if he trades his top two prospects, Dibs, the Giants become the worst farm in baseball by like a mile. Like, it wouldn't even be close. I mean, this, I want to play this for you because I think this is illuminating. Although, first, I want to remind you that you're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM in HD1 San Francisco, an Odyssey Sports Station, and the home of the Golden State Warriors and Valkyries, always live on the free Odyssey app, coming to you live from the Laughing Monk Studios. Dave Fleming was on the morning show earlier today, Dibs, and he's on every single week. And I thought this was a really good question by Shasky, who at the tail end of the interview essentially just asked, and you're going to hear the question. There's so many outfielders that they've drafted of late that are hanging out in AAA. Are any of them going to come up and help this team? And you're going to hear the question. You're going to hear Flem's answer, because I think this just gives a sense of where the Giants minor league system is right now. Here's Shasky and Flem.
I just wrote down, obviously Matos has been up and down a lot, but Luciano, Wade Meckler was playing second base, but he was an outfielder. Grant McCray, Hunter Bishop, any of these guys can maybe help right now? I'm just asking out loud. I don't know the answer. It might sound foolish, but you were talking about AAA, and they've got so many outfielders. I just wonder if one of these guys might get a look.
I wish I had a more positive answer. I just don't think so. I mean, I just don't think anybody has forced the issue. Luciano, I will say this about Marco. He's crushed left-handed pitching in the last couple months down there. Crushed it.
They need that.
And with the Giants, you know, with the Giants struggling against lefties, I bet there's at least some discussion going on, like, can we find a way to get this guy some at-bats against lefties here? He'd be the one, and I think Marco deserves some credit. Like, it has not been the career to this point that the Giants were hoping for, that he was hoping for. He's looking way more like a guy who's not going to be the franchise changer that the Giants were hoping. But he's still young, and he's had a positive step forward this year, and he's finally back to hitting the ball with power. Like, he's got 20 home runs or whatever. That's a pretty good number in 100 games, even in the PCL. So I guess I'll say Marco would be the guy on that list of you're looking for help against lefties. They're the lowest batting average against lefties in baseball, the Giants do. I mean, that makes no sense to me with the roster that they have. It's just crazy.
There's Flem. So the question from Shasky was, any of these various guys that we've heard so much about over the last 5, 6, 7 years, are any of them ready to help? And Flem begins the answer by saying, I wish I had a more positive answer for you. That's the state of the Giants farm system. They don't have anybody, one, that can help the team now, and you extend that out, you don't really have anybody that other teams are interested in acquiring in the first place.
And that's the problem. Other than, you know, Carson Wisenhunt and, you know, Bryce Eldridge.
Or guys you just drafted right now, potentially. Like, guys that might debut 5 years from now.
And that's what you did in the Boston trade. Yeah. You traded a couple of young single-A guys, but the Luciano piece is very interesting, and I'm just looking at his numbers over the last 30 days, 18 games, 7 home runs, and an OPS of 1,046. And I know a lot of that came in that one wild game. I think you talked about it in Reno.
He had like 11 RBI or something, 8 like RBI or something.
He had two homers. I think he drove in 7 on just the 2 home runs, and so it's a little skewed because of that, but he has been hitting great over the last month, and as Dave just said, you know, somebody who is chewing up left-handers, which has been the biggest bugaboo for this offense, is, you know, being able to hit left-handers. So that becomes an interesting acquisition as we get to the deadline, and it wouldn't be a trade acquisition, but, and I know it wouldn't play well with the casual Giants fans who are like, okay, you get to the deadline, and really, this is what we're doing? It's Marco Luciano. He's going to come up and what? Play right in place of Yaz when you face a lefty. Good luck with that out there.
Yeah, and where are you going to play in the field?
Right field. I mean,
can we even trust Luciano to play a corner outfield spot?
You can't trust Elliot Ramos to play a corner outfield
spot. That's fair.
And I'm thinking about yesterday's game where it's that it was not even a drive to left center. It was a medium deep fly ball to left, and
it was hit hard though, but.
But he completely misjudged it.
Yes.
Like, he completely
came nowhere near touching that baseball.
Right. And to his defense, you saw Toronto on 2 separate occasions. They had high pop flies that they were unable to field. I don't know if it was the high sky in the Rogers Center, and it was a difficult thing where kind of an odd start, right? A 1 o'clock Toronto start, and so the sun was definitely beaming through the roof, and it was a difficult day to field on balls in the air, but we've seen this too much from Elliot Ramos.
We have. But like, if that's the reality of their farm system, then I don't see any way in which they're willing to further deplete it in order to bring somebody in at this trade deadline. And then you have like the comparison of the messaging, right? But you remember Buster Posey in the dugout before a game in early June. This was before the Devers trade. And it was in the middle of that Padres series when the Giants could not score a run and they were losing all these close games. And it was previously to right now one of their low points in the season. They were really, really struggling. And then Buster DFA'd Lamont Wade. And Buster then spoke to the media before their next game and had this to say, which has become pretty famous around these parts.
Yeah, I mean, it's it's time to go. I mean, I think we all believe that we're better than what we've been with the bats the last 2.5, 3 weeks, and it's time to go.
It's time to go, and that's what Buster said when he DFA'd Lamont Wade. And if you recall, the Giants responded by winning, what, 6 or 7 games in a row, all of which I think were by one run. Close calls, but they were winning baseball games. And then they acquired Rafi Devers, and everyone's like, oh my God, Buster, it's time to go. Let's freaking go. That was the signal from management at that time. Now, let's think about how Buster is talking about the upcoming trade deadline, which again is now less than 10 days away. Here's Buster late last week on the Giants trade deadline approach. Quote, we're always going to listen. But at a certain point, too, I think you have to say there's a tremendous amount of belief in the team that you have. If I'm in the position of a player, if I'm constantly listening to people up top saying we need to make moves, at a certain point you'd say, well, do you not like the guys that are here? I don't know how you interpret that, Dibs, but to me that sounds like this is essentially our team, and I'm going to show faith that these guys can get it done.
That's the way I hear it, and if I look at what they have right now and I think about where would you actually find an upgrade, and first base has been a problem for the majority of the year, and well, you're hoping that Rafael Devers can at some point play first base, and I know Wilmer's there today, and you know Devers is not quite ready, whether it's the back or you know the groin or whatever it is, he's not played first base actually ever in his career in the majors, so... Yep. If he eventually can get over there, it frees up a little bit of a DH spot where you could probably put Elliot Ramos there and you could add maybe McCray comes up from AAA, a better defensive outfielder. But I look at the areas where they need improving, and I don't think that the trade market is a place where you can readily get the replacements that you need at a cost that you're going to be willing to stomach.
Yeah, no, I don't think so either. So... Again, if you're out there waiting for the Giants to make another seismic shift before the trade deadline, I mean, I could be wrong. I've been wrong before. I just do not see it happening over the next nearly 10 days before the trade deadline. And if we think that is off the table, Dibs, do you think there is any world at all in which they consider not like necessarily being full-on sellers, but testing the market, dipping their toes in, seeing what some of their players that maybe would be the classic deadline kind of players, see what those guys could be worth on the market? Do you think that's even possible?
I don't think it's that possible because really, as I look at it, the only one I think that would be dangleable, if there is such a word, would be Robbie Ray. You're not going to trade Logan Webb.
No.
He is your ace, your centerpiece. He's the face of your pitching franchise. And then the other guys like Roop and Birdsong, they're young and under massive team control. Verlander's got next to no market value with an 0-8 record and a 4.99 ERA. So, I mean, is somebody out there thinking, yeah, JV is the guy we really absolutely have to have? So, starting pitcher-wise, I don't think there's much that you would dangle. In the pen, you've got a good, young, controlled bullpen. I guess Tyler Rogers would be somebody that you could potentially dangle out there. And, you know, he's been so durable. He leads baseball in games pitched. But I think that your bullpen, your pitching staff in general is one that you like and you want to keep. And so you flip it over to the offense. And Devers and Adames and Chapman, those are three cornerstones. And Jungwoo Lee signed long-term. And so could you, you know, eventually look at somebody else that you might want to dangle out there, whether it's, you know, Ramos? Do you want to trade Ramos? No. Yaz is going to be a free agent, finally, first time in his career. Dom Smith probably doesn't have that much value. No. Bailey doesn't either. So I don't know where you would look if you were going to even do a lightweight sell. Like, what would be something that another team would really be interested in that you'd want to give up?
Well, okay, I heard Shasky talking about this morning, and I sent out this same tweet last night because of talking about Ramos defensively, and someone tweeted at me saying, do you think the Giants should be interested in using him as an asset to try to bring somebody else in? And I responded, and I said, I don't think that Elliot Ramos should be an untouchable in any of these conversations. If some other team calls and is interested in acquiring Elliot Ramos, I don't know how you feel, Dibs. If I'm the Giants, I'm listening. Elliot Ramos is not like a stop, no, no dice, we're not trading this guy. Like, Logan Webb is that. At this point, I would still say Devers and Adames are still that, considering you have these guys under control for a while. I mean, Jung-Hoo Lee is up there for me, too, not because you're so in love with what he's done, but because you have him for a long time, and that is your core. But Ramos is one that I'd listen. That would be your pathway to getting somebody of value in here right now. And the other issue, Dibs, that the Giants are going to run into at a certain point in time, and it's the issue that we brought up with Luciano, you don't have places to play a lot of these guys. You already have a backlog at DH. Elliot Ramos is so bad defensively. Again, the fifth worst defender in all of baseball, the third worst outfielder in all of baseball, and the worst left fielder in all of baseball, defensively. Purely talking about defense here. I don't know if that guy's not hitting like 275 and above and driving in 80 or more runs a year. I don't know how much longer you can survive with a player playing that kind of defense defensively and not have him at DH. But guess what? Giants can't play him at DH because they have a logjam already at DH.
You got too many DHs.
You have way too many of them.
Even if Devers eventually becomes a first baseman, which I think long-term, Bryce Eldridge, yeah, you would like him to come up and be your first baseman. So Devers is your DH.
Soon as maybe next year, Devers is your DH for the next 6 years.
You would figure. And so can Elliot Ramos become a better outfielder to where he's not bottom five in baseball and bottom three among left fielders? You would hope that that is the case, because even if you look down on the farm and you talk about Marco Luciano, who he doesn't come up here because he has no position either. You had him at short. He can't play short. You can't have him at third. Maybe he can play the outfield, but already you've got Ramos out there, and Matos is good but not great. So you're a team priding itself on pitching and defense, and you've got too many DHs right now. And you know, like I said, Wilmer Flores is playing first today. Hold your breath, because Wilmer Flores, at this point in his career, he's also a DH.
Yep.
But with the thing about Elliot Ramos is you have one more year, and then he goes into arbitration. So having that kind of a control,
valuable. Yep.
Very valuable. And he is a very good hitter. He's been a little bit quieter the past month, but that, to me, would be a risky sell for a guy who's only coming up on 26. He's still a very young player.
It would be. There's no doubt. But If we're talking about how barren the farm is, other than your top two guys, and if that's all that your farm has to claim, you're not going to want to move off of those guys, and you're trying to find a way to help the team win right now, you're going to have to give up of something of value that is currently on the big league squad. And Ramos is one that I would circle, just because he's not a guy that has signed a gigantic money contract. And because of what you're saying, why he's valuable to the Giants, he'd also be valuable to other teams. I don't think it's going to happen, but I would not immediately hang up the phone if somebody asked me about Elliot Ramos. Time for a break. When we come back, we will transition and we'll get into the 49ers, who open training camp tomorrow. Veterans report. I think a bunch of them are already on their way in to Santa Clara as we speak. If not, they have already arrived. We'll get into that, plus a whole lot more. And if you want to win a pair of tickets to Saturday's Giants-Mets game, it's also Stephen Curry giveaway night. We are giving you a chance to win a pair today, courtesy of Panini. All you need to know for now is be sure you're listening at 4:30, when we'll let you know exactly how you can win. And if you don't win today, we're giving away another pair of tickets to the Saturday Giants-Mets game during the show tomorrow. So just keep listening. Time for Niner Stock. Training camp is about to begin. We'll come back with that on Willard and Dibs. Dibs and Grandy with you next on 95.7 The Game.
Back to
Willard and Wibbs
on 95.7 The Game.
No, Willard, it's Dibs and Grandy this week here on 95.7 The Game. Dibs, it almost feels like Christmas Eve. You know why?
Tell me.
NFL training camp. Niners report to camp tomorrow. It's football season, Dibs.
That's so great.
Ooh.
It's the day before the day, because tomorrow is like almost like orientation in college, where you're not really starting college, but you, yay, good to see you again, orientation, we're here, and then
you do icebreakers where you sit in a circle.
Oh, my God. That's so funny.
Tell us your name, where you're from, and one fun fact about you.
Tell us your name and an animal that starts with the same letter as your last name. You know, it's just...
I hated those exercises.
Totally. And it's... I mean, I've actually run them in a bunch of different things and different levels, and every time I've run an icebreaker, it's like... Yeah, thank you. You can just tell that the people doing it are like, oh, God, this is so painful.
I'm really bad at on the spot, like, think of a fun fact about me. I'm terrible at that. I just need to have one stored and use it for everything.
Yeah, or you just come up with a well-concocted lie.
That's true.
Which, it's funny because we were doing the thing from Vegas, and Willard was like, you know, tell me about your night last night. And I was going to go into a whole thing and basically describe the plot of the movie The Hangover and just see how long it took him to catch
on. There was a tiger in my hotel room.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I went out with Grandy, and next thing you know, I couldn't find him, and I woke up on the roof. And
I lost a tooth.
That's right. I got a face tattoo.
Mike Tyson punched me.
So funny. I was thinking about starting to go down that road, but then I was like, this is kind of a lame bit. And I mean, Mark probably would have picked up on it, although he doesn't watch a ton of movies. I think that one he's probably seen.
Probably. That is a classic. I think most people have seen that at this point.
Yeah. But
yeah, I mean, I'm so excited about Niners camp, and it's actually funny. On Friday, me and Ken were sitting in the back, and the boss walked by, and Ken asked the boss, what are you excited about? And it was kind of an open-ended question. It didn't have to be about sports, but it was just, what are you excited about? And then the boss took a second to think, and I said, are you fired up for the Giants' second half beginning? Because it was Friday, the day of Game 1 in Toronto. And he said, you know what? Honestly, no, I'm not excited for the baseball second half. I'm excited for Niners training camp. And now it's finally here, coming up tomorrow. And the Niners are entering a season. One, that answer by the boss just tells you everything you need to know about baseball, I suppose. But we're a day away from training camp opening. No practice tomorrow. The first practice will be Wednesday. But Kyle Shanahan and I think John Lynch will both talk tomorrow, at least Kyle Shanahan. And we're going to get some answers on some of the biggest storylines facing the 49ers. And the two that come to mind immediately, Dibs. Number one, it's did Juwan report? How are conversations going? Have other teams expressed interest in acquiring him? And two, it's what the hell is up with Ricky Pearsall and whatever is bothering him physically? Those are the two things that come to mind immediately for me.
Same injury, new injury. What's the story with Ricky Pearsall? And I mean, the follow-up will be, if it is the same injury, was it a re-injury, a setback? Was it worse than what we thought going in? I do think those are the big questions going into the camp. And yeah, it says here in my email, Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch, 11 o'clock.
All right.
So I'm sure Steiny and Goo will either carry it live or have many portions of that. And then when you and I jump in at 1:45 with the crossover, we can talk about it as well. And then Wednesday, 10:25, practice, open to reporters, and cameras may shoot until team drills. And for those of you out there who've never been to a practice, what happens is you're out there for the first 4 or 5 periods, and they have timed sessions where they'll do 5 or 6 minutes at a time, and then they'll do different things. And after one of the periods, you've got multiple people with the Niners who come over and say, cameras off, cameras down, and then that's just it. You can still watch, but no more recording, no more doing whatever it is you're trying to do, social media or whatnot.
I wonder if we'll get Brock Purdy and other key Niners players tomorrow, because normally when they send out this media schedule and the email you're referring to, I'm looking at it right now as well, normally they say quarterback Brock Purdy available after Shanahan and Lynch or whatever it is. This just says following Lynch and Shanahan, players available in the auditorium. And it says that for every day other than when they're off over the next like couple of weeks. So we might also get Brock Purdy, maybe George Kittle, maybe Trent Williams, maybe Christian McCaffrey, maybe, you know, maybe Fred Warner, all of those kinds of players, like the leaders, the captains of the team. I'll be curious to hear what, I mean, Brock Purdy is going to give you the most cookie cutter quarterback answers. That's what he does. He's very good at that. But this is now also Brock Purdy's first training camp, not being paid a ton of money right now because the new contract doesn't kick in until next year. But his first training camp, Dibs, after having received that gigantic contract, just seeing the way that changes potentially the dynamic at all. Because now Brock's entering a situation where for the first time in his professional career, He has a crazy, incredibly high standard to uphold, and that standard comes courtesy of the contract that he signed.
And it also comes courtesy of the fact that you're the starting quarterback of the San Francisco 49ers, and you follow such people as John Brody, Joe Montana, and Steve Young, to name just a few of the great luminaries who've played quarterback for the Niners. So that in and of itself, forget just being a quarterback in the NFL. That right there, one of 32 starters, that carries a very high burden and a very high bar to clear. But when you're the Niners quarterback, and it's a franchise that has experienced Super Bowls and championships and legends and Hall of Famers, that in and of itself ratchets it up even more. As for who will talk, and I'm just looking at the schedule, and it's Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. They have Saturday off, then they're back at it on Sunday. You probably get one of the marquee guys a day, if that. They're going to definitely spread it out and, you know, kind of scatter them throughout the week. And, you know, you probably mix in some young guys and some veterans and, you know, give the media a taste of what's going on. And I know during the year, Brock Purdy's going to be expected to talk weekly.
Oh, yeah.
So you may not actually...
Did last year, too.
Yeah, you may not get him in this portion of it. You may look to other players who won't have media responsibility and let them go out there and, you know, carry the torch for the team.
How do you view the Juwan Jennings situation playing out? I guess maybe pretend you're John Lynch and or Kyle Shanahan, and you get asked the Juwan Jennings question tomorrow. What do you think the answer is going to be?
Well, you know, we're working right now behind the scenes with Juwan and his agent, and, you know, we understand that last year he had a terrific year, and, you know, if it wasn't for him getting thrown out of the game, he goes over 1,000 yards, and, you know, he hit a lot of the marks that allowed him to get incentivized. And, you know, his contract this year is one that is right now somewhat of a relative bargain for us. And, you know, we really like Juwan, and we want to make sure that he is comfortable and happy. So, you know, we're working with his agent right now behind the scenes to try to see what we can do to, you know, make Juwan feel like he is as loved and a part of the team as we actually feel that he is.
Thank you, John.
No problem.
Good answer. Can I offer one note?
Sure.
The only thing that I would add is at some point he will say, I mean, you know us. We're not in the business of letting good players walk away.
That's great. That is good. Yeah. Although you did let Deebo Samuel walk away. So.
And the part that John Lynch won't say is, yeah, we think he's not a good player anymore.
Yeah, he won't say that. And the other part of it is, you know, and he's always said that they like to draft and, you know, develop and keep the guys who are their A-listers.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if Juwan Jennings is a part of that A-lister group per se, but, you know, based on where you are with Ricky Pearsall starting out camp on the physically unable to perform list, Ayuk probably will start the year on the same list, and he'll probably miss 4 games as well. And you don't have a ton of reliable options at wide receiver. So as you start to look at your depth chart, if you don't have Juwan Jennings, yikes.
Well, I have to go and find exactly what he said, but Matt Maiocco, Niners insider for NBC Sports Bay Area, I'll have to find this. He said something along the lines of this past weekend relating to Pearsall on the PUP list, the PUP list, physically unable to perform, essentially said, like, doesn't think that it's any big deal. There's been no update provided by the Niners relating anything injury-wise, and he seemed to think that it might be pretty quick when he comes off of that PUP list. The question that I have, Dibs, is if it's not a big deal and maybe he comes off of it as early as this week, what's the point in even putting him on the list in the first place? What does that accomplish for a team at this point in training camp? Because I don't know if he's like ready to go by, say, Thursday. Why even have him on the list in the first place at all?
I don't know. I don't know if it's financial or if it's to where you can add additional bodies. I don't think you can just have, I don't know, 200 people out there at camp. You probably have a limit, right, of how many bodies you can have going into camp. I don't know if it's 90 or what the number is, but if he's not able to be out there and participate, by having him on the PUP probably gives you the latitude to bring in a different body, at least for the start of camp.
Maybe. Let's see. Here's a quote from the Niners Talk podcast on NBC Sports Bay Area. Unless there's been some bad setback that nobody knows about, based on what we were told in June, Ricky Pearsall should be ready to rock and roll when the Niners get on the practice field for the first time on Wednesday. So Maiocco's saying, Everything that I've heard suggests that Ricky's going to be good to go on Wednesday, and if that's the case, great. I just don't – I'm not fully convinced that's what's going to happen, because if he's ready to go on Wednesday, the first day of training camp practice, then I don't know why he's on the PUP list to begin with. So that's something to keep an eye on. I don't know what will be the first question to Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch, whether it is Ricky Pearsall or Juwan. Probably Juwan would be my guess. But those are the two things that immediately come to mind. And considering, Dibs, that those are both players in the Niners wide receiver room that would figure to play a lot of snaps early in the season, but also later in the season, wide receiver becomes one of the more interesting positions for the Niners this whole year. One, because you have the drama around Ayuk, which isn't the injury, although that's part of it, but it's just, do the Niners still want him? Does Ayuk still want to be here? When he comes back, how does he look? But with all of those questions around the wide receiver room, I think so many of us, when we get down there to practice and we're choosing what portion of practice to watch, I'm keeping my eyes on the wide receivers, because there's going to be room for somebody that we might not know a lot about yet, that maybe by the end of the year is one of the reasons why this team potentially is successful or not.
It makes sense when you think about, you know, what this team is looking like right now with Ayuk out for most likely at least 4 games. I think it could potentially be longer. When you're coming back from 2 ligament tears and you had the repair, it usually takes, you know, 9 months or more to come fully back. And I went through the return to play protocol to have that injury, and it usually lands for Ayuk between week 4 and week 8, I think, as far as the likelihood of his return. And you've got DeMarcus Robinson, who is yet to be suspended by the league, but the history would tell you that a DUI is normally a cookie-cutter 3 game. So let's just say Robinson's out for 3, Ayuk is out for 4. Well, you've got Ricky Pearsall, if he's healthy, and Juwan Jennings, if he signs. Those are your two real returning receivers. And you're going to have a lot, I think, of 2 tight end sets going out there when you don't have a lot of proven commodities at receiver.
Yeah, you are. More on that in a second. But I did want to let you know that it is 4:30, which means it is time for you to listen really intently. You know why? Because we're giving away a pair of tickets to Saturday's Giants-Mets game. It is a special 6:05 Saturday night game, and the first 20,000 fans get a Steph Curry bobblehead, and we are giving you a chance to win a pair of tickets courtesy of Panini. All you need to do right now is listen, because something we say over the next 30 minutes will be what you need to win. In the 5 o'clock hour, we will ask you about something we said coming up here in the next 30 minutes. And if you're the first person to give us the right answer on the contest line, you'll be the winner. Here's the contest line so you can save it to your phone, but don't call now. It's 415-523-4652. Again, 415-523-4652. And remember, if you don't win today, we're giving you another chance to win during the show tomorrow. But all you need to do for the next 30 minutes is listen. And then in the 5 o'clock hour, we will ask you a question based on something that we say coming up here shortly. Dibs, I'm with you in terms of the wide receiver room. That's going to be really, really interesting, because you're going to get a lot of, I would imagine, at least early in camp, a lot of work for Jacob Cowing. A lot for the rookie Jordan Watkins, and then some of these other guys that we do not know a ton about just yet. So circle that. I think for me, Dibs, what might be the most, maybe the best camp battle, for me, it's whoever's going to play linebacker opposite Fred Warner. Now, the Niners will play 3 linebackers at times, but they very often play nickel, and when you have 5 defensive backs, you play only 2 linebackers, so it's Fred and whoever his partner is. I would imagine right now, Dibs, D. Winters has the leg up on that, because he's been in this system for a bit, although he's completely new to Robert Saleh. But the guy that they drafted out of Oklahoma State, Nick Martin, he might have an opportunity to go on and win that job himself. In terms of positions, Dibs, that we might see officially decided on the training camp training ground, as opposed to the wide receiver room, which might be decided by injuries and potential trades or extensions, I think we're going to see a position battle really battle out on that linebacker spot opposite Fred Warner, and that's the one that I'm most excited to see just how that one plays out.
And it's super critical when you think about the success of this defense in the past, and it was Warner and Greenlaw, and they were the two guys. And when the two of them were out there, like you said, most teams run a healthy amount of the nickel defense, yep, which is five DBs. It's a 4-2-5, essentially, with just two linebackers. And the 49ers do that as well. And so if you're going to just two linebackers, it becomes super important to have somebody like Dre Greenlaw, who he was a ferocious hitter, very, very fast player, as is Fred Warner. And so the 49ers defense is predicated on having that athletic and not necessarily light, but ferocious, very mobile linebacker. So that will be one to watch when we get into training camp and you start to see maybe when the first preseason game happens or you get deeper in the preseason, who's actually getting the reps. And you know, the depth chart, when it initially comes out from the team, who's listed in that linebacker spot opposite Fred Warner, that is certainly one to keep an eye on.
I always love when the first depth chart comes out, and it gets released by the Niners, but what is the disclaimer at the top where it says unofficial or whatever, and it's like, don't read into this, but then you go on Twitter or any social media, like, within minutes of it being posted and released, and you have everybody drawing season-long conclusions out of the first unofficial depth chart. It's always the best when that sort of thing happens. But I guarantee you that linebacker spot is going to be the one that we overreact to, like almost every single training camp and preseason snap, because you have a couple of young guys. Like the starting linebacker opposite Fred Warner is going to be a guy that we have not seen a ton of. Whether it is D. Winters or Nick Martin or maybe Tatum Bethune or whoever it is, I would imagine it's likely going to be D. Winters or Nick Martin, but whoever it is, Dibs, it's going to be one that's relatively new, and he will be circled week one. Whoever it is will be circled week one, because that is such a key spot of this Niner defense. And you said it, when Fred Warner had an elite running mate in Dre Greenlaw pre-injury, Niners defense was one of the best in the NFL, and there were obviously some other circumstances, but there is no doubt that there was a correlation between Greenlaw's injury and the Niners defense struggling last year. There were other reasons, but that was one of them.
A big one, and part of that too was Devondre Campbell came in, and before he became just an outright quitter, quitting on his team in the game that, I think that was the Rams game, right? When
forget exactly which game it was.
I thought it was that game. It was a game that I was at. I do remember that.
Bloop.
And thank you. And I think it was the Ram game, because I wasn't at the Lions game subsequent to that.
It was my sister's birthday.
I had the vid, I believe, and so DNP COVID for your boy, and he just quit on the team. But before he quit on the team, he wasn't very good.
No.
And I remember Grandy's grades, and that's coming up again this year.
Oh,
you did
such
a great job of, you know, grading seven different areas, and inevitably we would go to the defense, and I think front seven is how you would
separate front seven and DBs.
And we'd get to the front seven, and every week it was Devondre, Blinken, Campbell. And
he dragged the whole group down.
He did, and you would just rail against him. And after the first couple of weeks, I was like, you know, I'm watching everything, but maybe I need to watch DC a little bit more closely. And so I started zeroing in on Devondre Campbell, and he was as bad as you were grading him. And to your point, linebacker tandem, when you have Fred Warner playing on a broken ankle, essentially, right? And then Devondre Campbell, who wasn't doing very well either, that was a big reason why your defense lacked a little bit.
Absolutely. Now, again, there are other reasons. Nick Sorensen was the defensive coordinator. Who's the defensive coordinator now? Robert Saleh. You know who's a gigantic fan of that? How about George Kittle, who was on the Up and Adams with Kay Adams on FanDuel TV last week? George Kittle on the off-season move he's most excited about. Here's Kittle.
I am so excited that Robert Saleh is back in the building. He is an incredibly talented coach. I love everything about him. I just love having him in the building, his energy, his aura, all of it, the way that he talks to the guys, the way that he motivates people. I'm just so excited to have him back in the building. And then, you know, it's nothing against coach we've had in the past. I just thought he was so good at what he did when he was here. And just like the way he builds the defense up and like gives them, you know, their confidence, their character, the way that they play. I'm just a huge fan of what he brings to a building. And I'm just could not be excited, more excited that he's here.
I love that from Kittle. Nothing against some of the other guys we've had before. I just think Robert Saleh is amazing at what he does. And he is right. There was also a major drop off after D'Amico Ryans, the guys that they had in here before they got Sala back.
Right. It went Sala, Ryans. I can honestly say I'm sort of built for
Steve
this.
Steve Wilks.
And then
Nick Sorensen,
who is now with the Cowboys as their special teams coordinator. And it's interesting because when he lost his gig here, there was talk that he might just get reassigned to special teams coordinator here, and then that never happened. And I think Shanahan even came out and said something to the effect that Sorensen wasn't necessarily fired, but you're going to look for something else for him to do. And that actually never came to fruition. And he probably got a better gig somewhere else as a special teams coordinator, and he went to Dallas.
Kind of awkward if you're Nick Sorensen, even if you're the special teams coordinator, which I don't know for sure if he was offered that with the Niners. But even if you do take the special teams coordinator job, you were the DC last year. I don't care what anyone says. That is a demotion. You got demoted. So that would be pretty awkward. Me personally, Dibs, I would feel more comfortable taking, if the two same jobs are being offered, special teams coordinator with the Niners or anywhere else, I would feel way more comfortable taking the demotion on somebody else's team and just getting out of that building, because I don't know if I could deal with the awkwardness of being demoted from where I was the year prior.
Awkward. And I'm trying to think of when, if and when I've been demoted, and I'm not sure I've been let go. We know that. It's not that funny, Granny, when you get fired.
Would you rather be demoted or let go entirely?
I'd rather be demoted, especially at this point where, you know, I got a young family, and it's like you got to have a gig, but it's very humbling when you get demoted and you have to go to the same workplace, and everybody knows what you used to do, and now you're no longer doing that, but you're still working there. Can be very very humbling, so to speak.
Awkward. Yep. A little awkward, there's no doubt. We're brought to you by Fremont Bank. Here for you, here for good. Plenty more to dive into on the 49ers. You're going to want to hear what Richard Sherman, former Niner, had to say about Juwan Jennings. We've got that coming up for you, plus a whole lot more. Training camp is a day away. It is football season, ladies and gentlemen. We'll continue to break that down when we come back. It's Willard and Dibs, Dibs and Grandy with you. More coming up next. Again, we're brought to you by Fremont Bank. Here for you, here for good, right here on 95.7 The Game.